Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 9, Text 13. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Samskite Kirite Pandho. Pitsabala Prajabhadu. Vishmat krite bhuvun kleshan sapta sokavati mahu. As far as my daughter-in-law Kunti is concerned, upon the great general Pandu's death, she became a widow with many children, and therefore she suffered greatly. And when you were grown up, she suffered a great deal because of your actions, purport. The sufferings of Kunti Devi are doubly lamented. She suffered greatly because of early widowhood and to get her minor children brought up in the royal family. And when her children were grown up, she continued to suffer because of her son's actions. So her sufferings continued. This means she was destined to suffer by providence. And this one has to tolerate without being disturbed. Om Jnana Samarandasya Jnananjana Savataya Nakshuram Nirtam Nena Tvajmai Sri Virave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Mano Vishtam Kapitam Yena Bhutale Kayam Rupa Kadamayam Siddhati Sapadantitam Adadana Sinamdante Idamya Chaitina Pina Imadhuta Padamboja Visham Janma Janmani Aragi Bhakti Visham Piyatnai Atayamamanadistamandam Sambhuriya Paradurupu Dupi Sinatanasam Padumakriyami Pancha Kopa Puru Jasya Vipasintu Bhayedika Patitanam Bhavanejo Vaishnavejo Namo Nama Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Vivas Adi Ghor Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Namo Hare Namo Rama Rama Hare Hare. So greetings from Vrindavan. Very nice time of the year. Very nice. I've been having class every evening in Giriraj Swami's place. Very suitable place. Very wonderful neighborhood in Braj. And he's got his neighbors. And speaking on the CC. And we're on the Anti Lila where Ramananda Roy is asking Rupa Goswami all the different details of the drama. Because it's through poetry and drama, what Sri Chaitanya instead said that through poetry and drama, without that, you can't really express rasa or perfected, or give any idea of perfected, perfected love. Nature of poetry and drama, it has a method of recreating the emotions so you can experience it. It's not just describing it, you know, scientifically or analytically, this is what love is. It kind of recreates it. It's a very, very technical science that people go Swami master. So, you know, Ramananda Roy is asking him, what is Parochana? Parochana means the way to induce eagerness in the audience, sometimes by phrasing the place or phrasing the audience itself. I mean, there's such incredible verses And it's a very, very nice audience. Even though the subject matter is high, it's really nice, and we have one young devotee who's expert in the chanting, and he's chanting the verses in the meter with a little machine that's very tambura. We're really relishing hearing these wonderful. One verse by Rupa Goswami describes Radharani's qualities. This one line just struck out. I mean, just trying to describe Radharani and that Bob and Lou, he said, the luster of Radharani puts gold in a painful situation. So, it's a metaphor. Sri Alankar, a very, very good ornament of his poetry. And all the Vaishnavas are astounded at the mercy that Rupa Goswami is getting with Lord Chaitanya. And it was very interesting. The mercy, Prabhupada described that Rupa Goswami described mercy, but they got mercy, but it wasn't that he didn't qualify for it without belying the fact that it was mercy. Prabhupada just says a beautiful sentence in the verse that he says, Krishna is responsive. He's a person. He's responsive. He gives mercy, but he's responsive. And what was he responsive to? The service of Rupa Goswami, the mood of service. It's not that Rupa Goswami didn't have intelligence, he didn't have poetic ability and all these things, but your abilities cannot go to the height of its full potential to actually serve God in its fullest, unless you're surrendered to the will of God, and God can work through you to use your abilities and talents. Rupa Goswami had talents, had ability. He was a kavi, but you cannot express transcendental emotion to the extent he did, where he was blowing the mind of Sri Ramadhar and Ramananda Roy. They were just astounded. Ramananda Roy, it was like he had millions of mouths. And then he came up, he was just astounded. He was like hearing, this is not poetry. Someone just came on and asked to mute their phone. He said, this is not poetry. He said, this is a continuous flow of nectar that gives the Sadantara star the essence of spiritual conclusion. This is not just poetic expression. This is something more. And then in ecstasy, he says, what is the use of a bowman's arrow and a poet's poetry if they don't pierce the heart and make the head spin? And then Lord Chaitanya starts speaking about him and embraces him and asks all the devotees there to embrace him. And the devotees were astounded. How has he gotten, one person got so much mercy? They weren't envious. They were just astounded. So what is the qualities of Rupa Goswami? So we're reading that. And then there's a few devotees here. Jainitai and Devapriya, Kadambamala, and Jayadev, and Madhavi, who went on the fifth run. And I can't even pronounce it. Anastasia, Anastasia, she's here. Very, very nice. Came on the system. And her brother, who is younger and very bold, decided to give her a spiritual name. So now her name is Mila. Mila is the Shakti of Krishna that creates the Bhagavad-gita. But anyway, so now we'll be called Mila. The brother decided to give a spiritual name and it's not like a nickname. So Mila is here. She's sitting here now at the Sangha. She said that she always wanted to like come to a Sangha and actually see me because she just heard me for so many, like 2 years now. And I kept on saying that most of my expression is in the hand. So I was just wondering, no one in this tongue, when they're listening, they can't see my hands. But my hands are moving and explaining everything. So she was finally glad to see my hands explain all the different subjects. So she's sitting here. So we went all day today. We went out today. I took all the people I mentioned and Alexander, and we went to an interesting trip run. We went to Java, which is the place of Radharani when she got married. It was so nice. She had such a wonderful kirtan there, an old temple, and Kadamba Mala, 7 years ago, promised she would get outfits for the deity and took one of their outfits to measurement. It took her 7 years to fulfill her promise, but she brought three beautiful outfits. It was old Sajari. He was so happy. And we did kirtan and we talked about it. And then, you know, Radharani every day goes to Nandagram on the path that goes from Jawa to Terkadamba to Nandagram. So we all took the path and we walked along the path. And it's so beautiful. You see cranes and, you know, beautiful birds. And you really go out into the forest. And it's only about a 20, 30-minute walk maximum. And the ground, it's like 6 inches of talcum powder. It's just such, it's so, Johnny Tai said, if the whole world was like this, no one would need shoes. It's so nice, you know, and we're walking and there's ponds on the side and Raj is exceptionally green. And then we went to Terkadamba and I know Rasa Gyat is there. Remember we were chanting that Rupa Goswami poetry. But every year now, it's even more beautiful than before. That the person who's there is so expert. He made a kind of little fence around the whole section of Terkadamba out of beautiful red lotus petals made out of cement, the whole thing around. And when you come in, there's a big marble gate, there's a sign that says, Welcome, Vaishnavas. There's a little altar for his Krishna Balaram deity. We sat there, had kata, had the sweet rice. Very sublime. And the weather this time of the year, it should be miserable. That may not come. We got the benefit here of global warming in the winter because the weather is beautiful and we're really, really relishing it. So we're in this beautiful section of the Bhagavatam where Krishna was introduced as a person. A person is responsive. Such a beautiful statement I thought that. Krishna is responsive. He's a person. And a person who's responsive serves others. And when you serve others, you put yourself in a subordinate position. So the glory of God is that he subordinates himself to his devotees. He becomes this, and that's why you're attracted to Krishna. Because he's a beautiful person. And he's responsive. And that's really the point. And we're going to discuss in these purports a very difficult point. How Krishna's responsive to the devotees, even in their suffering, actually. It is Krishna being responsive. Prabhupada says that in a very interesting way in purports coming up. So Krishna's responsive to the devotees, and we're giving an example of how he's so beautifully responsive at the end of this Kurukshetra war. I described it as the mind of God. He's thinking of his devotee Bhishma Dev, who's lying on a bed of arrows, has the power to leave at his will, and is just waiting there. He wants to die, seeing his beloved Lord, Sri Krishna. And therefore, through the Paramatma, anyway, Krishna and Rasa Dev are unable to answer you to your question of how such a religious and pious person did everything good, suffered so much in his life. And the suffering he's looking at now is the carnage after the war, a war with which Fort Greene thrown him, and therefore the war which he takes responsibility for the results of his lowest party. Unavoidable. He had a fight to protect himself, and all this happened, and remind me of Arjuna's statement in Bhagavad Gita, Nimittani Viparitani. You do one thing, and the opposite happens. But no matter which way you turn, with happiness, the stress comes. I translate that sometimes into my local language, damned if you do, damned if you don't. And these kind of circumstances are so difficult to understand. And to understand God, we have to understand these circumstances. So what we're seeing, anyway, the mind of God, he's just meditating on his devotees. He's meditating on his devotees. And he wants to give them the greatest thing, and the greatest thing is self. Krishna wants to give himself to the devotees. I remember at a time where we all have these times in life where I was going through the most trouble and difficulty. I remember, this person, Narottam Swami, came to console me. And it gave me a nice realization, someone who's realized, if you tolerate, there will be a fruit at the end. And sometimes Krishna takes away to give himself. While he's taking away, and while our desires are being frustrated, because it's the preparatory stage for giving himself, and we haven't gotten it yet, we can't understand what's happening. But in time, if we do tolerate and learn the lessons of our life, we'll understand how, even in our greatest tribulation, it's somehow Krishna reciprocating with us to give himself. Which is not easy, because we're so uninclined to have God. Because having God means having the absolute truth. The absolute truth is meant to be served. And that we don't want. So that desire to not be the devotee or servant, but to be the controller and enjoyer, Krishna deals with that. And he deals with that by not fulfilling that desire. If that desire will not satisfy our soul, we blame God because we're not enjoying and controlling. But if that desire was fulfilled, we wouldn't be satisfied. Because it's antithetical to the soul. In fact, there can only be, you can't do that. Only be that illusion. And that's what's happening in this material world. God's satisfying that desire to some extent. And also frustrating it to some extent. It's just like the child of the good family who wants to leave home, and the father, drives into the town so he can hitchhike. So the father is satisfying his desire to frustrate his desire. And that's basically God's relationship with us. He satisfies our desire. But we actually, it's a desire that cannot satisfy us. And he gives us this role as the body and allows us to live that out. So we saw that, the mind of God, and we also see the character of the devotee. And we see the character in Bhishma Dev. Bhishma Dev is the example given in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu for compassion. Because when he sees Yudhisthira coming, he cries out of joy because his grandson, who through all his tribulations is now established as the king. The Jiva comes, neither soon dies. You do not deserve to live, he says, meaning that your suffering is so great it would be better that you died. And he begins to cry, the great, valiant grandsire of the Kuru dynasty, he begins to guide. So we see Bhishma, the example of compassion. We'll also see Bhishma Deva, the example of guidance. Yamyam vapis pranam bhavam, potentiam take whatever you think at the time of death, to that state you go. So we see how the great soul is able to die by fixing his consciousness on God. We also saw a great example of Bibi Chaitanya, my exalted godbrother, in his room, you know, just never took any medicine. You can see someone dying a natural death, how less painful it is than in the West, where they artificially keep you alive so that you can suffer more. The modern medicine, basically in one sense, it artificially keeps people alive, and therefore their bodies, when they die, is in such an intense condition of suffering. Because it's artificially been kept kind of alive, pumped with drugs, pumped with tubes. Here's a person who's never took medicine and solved the healthcare problem. Yeah, I mean, in one sense. I mean, he just had faith in God and he just died naturally. But he saw at the end, he didn't die in such pain. In fact, I know one friend's an Ayurvedic doctor, and, you know, he described that, you know, the way the Ayurveda would deal with, let's say, a disease like cancer, you know, which means that the body is, when it gets to a stage where it's inevitable, the recommendation is just be fasted for death. And therefore you die in a very, very high consciousness and with relative considering the disease. But anyway, the art of dying, we see Bhishma Deva, and he's the example of prema. Believe it or not, Bhishma Deva is given in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sutra as the example of prema. It's what's prema? Sandrandana Visheshatma. Sandra means like steel. Sandrandana, it means nothing can penetrate. I mean, your consciousness is so thickly Krishna conscious. Like the sun is just intensely heat and light. When you're so intensely Krishna conscious, when you're so intensely Krishna conscious that nothing else can penetrate the consciousness but Krishna, that's prema. The Bhishma Deva, that example, it's one of my favorite statements in the Bhagavad-gita when it describes Bhishma Deva at the end. That who fought in so many battles and spoke on so many subjects just fixed his mind on Krishna. That's samadhi. Samadhi, D is the intelligence, samadhi is equal, fixed. That's real samadhi. The stage of samadhi is that you're so fixed on Krishna, you are not even cognizant of anything else. That's samadhi. That's prema. So we have those examples, and now Bhishma Deva starts to answer the question. You are protected. And how you are protected? You're protected in difficulties by the proper knowledge and understanding, which allows you to extract the realization that that circumstance is meant to give you. This is the real protection. Each circumstance that you're facing is giving you, by God, by providence, it's meant to give you a realization that will bring you to a higher stage of realization and happiness. So the real protection from facing any difficulty is the tools to learn the lessons that difficulty is given. And therefore, you can turn any situation beyond duality. You can turn it to a gift of God. And he described three things that one does. In each circumstance, you have to see God and worship God. In each circumstance, you have to respond to that circumstance. You have to respond to that circumstance by the appropriate principle of truth, whether it's forgiveness, action, tolerance, whatever the appropriate. And you have to respond to that circumstance by following the guidance of those more elevated and experienced, the Vaishnavas and the Brahmas. Now, Bhishma Dev is meditating on the level of suffering that we feel. And he's going to make a point that a faithful Vaishnava tolerates and sees that the suffering is destined. And destined, but has that positive type outlook. May not understand why, but knows that it's inevitable, that I had this coming to me. And it may not even be karma. It may just be the will of God for one reason or another. And you know, in a purpose, this is obviously a thought-provoking, and but it's discussed in such detail. And later, when it talks about when Bhishma Dev is talking to Yudhisthira, he described that the great sages all know very confidentially about God's glory. And the first of glory is just Anubhav, and Prabhupada said, pure devotees in the Lord are all bhavas, or persons who know the glories of the Lord in different transcendental loving services. So, your bhavas, they understand that there's some type of, in all circumstances, there's some type of exchange with God. There's some type of exchange with God, and they have that full confidence. Because they live their lives surrendered to God, they've developed that realization. Even though they may not know the particular instant and what's going on, they know from their experience as a devotee of God that it's some type of relationship with God that brings one closer. And they're fixed in that. With realization, they're fixed in that. Let those calamities happen again and again. This is the mood of a devotee. And when you develop that faith in loving God, you live your life that way. Now I always say this when I'm talking with, I can say, you know, talk is cheap. You know, but I have confidence that as we advance in our devotion and love for God, this becomes more and more reality. That we tolerate, we accept. We have so much love for God and so much confidence in the existence of God in our lives by our dependence on Him and our experience of God's reciprocation that we develop an absolute confidence that it's God. And we love God. And we love God and we accept God. It's so that feeling of affection and love for God becomes so pervading in our lives that it can overcome any circumstance. I guess even the example is, you know, Christ hanging on the cross. That's probably one of the messages. And I give that example of my own uncle, Rabbi Alexander Good. And he was a chaplain in the military. He's a very, very dynamic person. He had a PhD from Johns Hopkins, a history, and he was trained in Harvard Divinity School to be a chaplain. And he was a very dynamic guy. I read about his biography. He was a very progressive, dynamic guy. He was criticized for his interfaith work, you know. And he volunteered, and you know, that ship sunk, the USS Dorchester. It was sunk by the Germans. And the ship went down, and him and these other chaplains, I told the story, they got everybody else off the ship. I always make the joke, you know, if I was there, if one of the chaplains was a sannyasi, they got everyone off the boat. They even lied to people to give them their own life preservers and their own gloves. You know, they got everyone else up the ship. They were confident young people that were, you know, facing death for the first time. And, you know, people lived because of them, and they remembered they lived because of them. And there were eyewitnesses of the people that survived, seeing when the ship went down that the four chaplains were the last ones off. They helped everyone else, and they were different denominations, and they were arm in arm chanting the Psalms of David, glorifying God. Fully confident, this is God, and God is glorious, and I love God. Not, you know, losing faith, why does this happen to me? It was there, and I always joke, it's kind of a joke, that if I was there as a sannyasi, you know, I would have said, okay, you know, prepare the lifeboat, okay, you know, prepare the lifeboat for the sannyasis, and then some dying young guys trying to get, hey, no, you can't get up there, it's just for the sannyasis. And I joke, but would I have that same faith to be able to do my duty and save others? So, and this type of point is going to be talked about here. And the contrast is, despite Yudhisthira's religiosity, Prabhupada in the purport, I mean, talks about it in such a powerful way, and a future kid. Despite the power of pious acts, the power of personality, the power of expert management, and the power of weapons under the direct supervision of Krishna, the Pandavas has suffered so many practical reverses that can only be explained due to the influence of Kala inevitable. Power of personality, the power of act. 14. Sarvakala kutamanye bhavatam chayarapyam sataro yadvashe loke vayo eva ganavali. In my opinion, this is all due to inevitable time under whose control everyone in every planet is carried just as the clouds are carried by the wind. This is Bhishma Dev, which is trying to relieve his fear, anxiety. Inevitable, due to inevitable time. Allah could come. And yeah, I think, under whose control every planet is through. Just brings it to another level, God. It's just purport, very beautiful. And then there's actually a story too of Yudhisthira before the Rajasuya sacrifice. And Krishna asked him, "Is there anything I want?" He says, "I want so much wealth. I want beautiful children. I want dominion over the world." This is what. Why did Yudhisthira say that? He said that because he wanted to show that all desires are satisfied to want to worship Krishna. If it's just that you become a devotee and Krishna shows his mercy by taking everything away, who's going to become Krishna conscious? But it's not that Krishna takes everything away. There's a commentary on that verse, Yasya Hum Anugramami, I'm not sure if it's Prabhupada says it or if it's, when Krishna's kind, he gives the devotee what he wants. When he's really kind, he takes everything away. So let's listen to Prabhupada's purpose. It's very, very powerful. If there is control by time all over the space within the universe, as there is control by time all over the planet, and time is destiny. All the big, gigantic planets, including the sun, are being controlled by the force of air, as the clouds are carried by the force of air. It just says this. Everything is controlled. Similarly, the inevitable kala or time controls even the actions of the air and other elements. Everything is moving by God, purposefully, to teach lessons, to bring things closer to Him. Everything, therefore, is controlled by the supreme kala, a forceful representative of the Lord within the material world. Just think about that. Everything is controlled. God may be taking away everything, and the next minute He can give everything. It's all being controlled. Thus, Yudhisthira should not be sorry for the inconceivable action of time. Everyone has to bear the actions and reactions of time as long as one is within the conditions of the material world. Yudhisthira should not think that he had committed sins in his previous birth and is suffering consequences. Even the most pious has to suffer the conditions of material nature. But a pious man is faithful to the Lord, for he's guided by the bona fide Brahmins and Vaishnavas following the religious principles. These three guiding principles should be the aim of life. Brahmins, the Vaishnavas, the religious principles. One should not be disturbed by the tricks of eternal time. Even the great control of the universe, Brahmaji, is also under the control of time. Therefore, one should not grudge being thus controlled by time, despite being a true follower of religious principles. It's described that even when a devotee is liberated, you know, if you become perfect, you become liberated, it means you should die, which you shouldn't be within this body anymore, really. He should transcend. But even the devotee, even if he's liberated, there's some commentators that say that the corrupted karma continues. There's different types of karma. I forgot the names of it. Not just that, but there's basically things that you haven't suffered for yet, things you'll suffer for in the future, and things you're suffering for now, something like that. But the point is, it's karma. You have karma. You know, you may be born with a defect. You become pure, you still have that defect. Not that pure God changes eyes back. But it says, one thing is that some commentators say the karma continues. This karma is the body. And even if you're liberated, you still need to have a body to practice to get prema bhakti. So the body can even continue. And for the devotee, there's no good or bad. Anything's bringing in close to the Krishna. So, anyway, God is absolute. And God is good. It's inevitable. The devotee doesn't permit. He has that confidence. And I know you can bring up horrible things that happen to people. I'm not saying it's not a challenge. I'm not saying it's not a challenge, but understanding God is a challenge. It's understanding that having a conception that God does not exist is a challenge. It's as much as a challenge or more than, you know, saying that He doesn't exist. really get into the thoughts of what it means. God is reality. And either logical choice is beyond our conception. You can have a logical choice that reality never existed, right? Well, we have a logical choice that reality has always been existing. We have no, we can't imagine something that has no beginning. So our logical mind, it must have had a beginning. How can it go on and on and on and on? Our logical mind cannot conceive of something that has no beginning, that reality was always existing. What about before then and before then? We can't fathom that. But we can't even fathom that it was nothing existing and then reality started. That opens. So the two choices don't make sense to us. Whichever way you analyze it, the concept of God is beyond our conception to. You just have to experience God and surrender to God and relish God. The thing is, easier said than done. How the class is going. So quickly. Yatra dharma sukaro raja Siddhapa nirvakodara Krishna sri gandhavam chapam Sridh Krishna sitovapat. Oh, how wonderful is the influence of inevitable time. It is irreversible. Otherwise, how can there be reverses in the presence of Yudhisthira, the son of the demigod controlling religion? Bhima, the great fighter with the club, the great bowman Arjuna, with his mighty weapon Gandiva, and above all, the Lord, the direct well-wisher of the Congress. So we listen to Prabhupada's purpose, and I'm developing more and more appreciation for Prabhupada's purpose. The depth of his realization. It's so clear and simple that sometimes an overly intellectual person like me misses it. Because he makes the truth so direct and so simple and so powerful, and it can change hearts. And now, more and more, I'm becoming astounded by the depth of his purport. Purport. As far as the material or spiritual resources required, there was no scarcity in the case of the Pandavas. Material, they were well equipped because two great warriors, namely Bhima and Arjuna, were there. Spiritually, the king himself, Yudhisthira, was the symbol of religion, and above all of them, the personality of Godhead Sri Krishna was personally concerned with their affairs as the well-wisher. And yet there were so many reverses on the side of the Pandavas. Despite the power of pious acts, the power of personality, the power of expert management, and the power of weapons under the direct supervision of Lord Krishna, the Pandavas suffered so many practical reverses, which can only be explained as due to the influence of Kala, inevitable time. Kala is identical with the Lord himself, and therefore the influence of Kala indicates the inexplicable wish of the Lord. There is nothing to be lamented when a matter is beyond the control of any reason. And then, Yudhisthira Bhishma points his finger and says, Niyastya Karichit Rajan, Puman Veda Vidititam, Yadvijag Daya Yukta, Uyanti Kaviyogi. He looks at and he points to him, Yudhisthira King. He's pointing to Krishna. No one can know the plan of the Lord. Even though great philosophers inquire exhaustively, exhaustively, they're bewildered. Because the plan of the Lord is to inspire us to become pure and unalloyed servants. Because that's what we are. And because he won't dictate that, it's almost like God can do everything. But one thing is very difficult to do, and that's to change that. is it has to come from us, because he's created us as sentient and individual. He has to inspire us. And I give examples to show the difficulty of doing that task. I ask everyone to think of a person that they would like to change more than anybody else in the world. And you look at the person, it's usually the husband, it's the wife, it's the husband, but how difficult it is to change that person. Give them the truth that you see. Especially since people are conditioned since time immemorial. It's so difficult to change people, to inspire people. So God has to do that. And they're endlessly entangled. And the other thing I can say is, changing a person is not changing one thing. To change one thing, you've got to change so many other things. To teach someone one thing, you may have to teach them so many other things. And I'm seeing that in my whole life, how much effort Krishna has made to give me simple truth. He had to do a song and a dance to teach me simple truth. You know what? There's a million more simple truths I need to know. I can see it. And every year I'm learning, and every year I think, now I know the absolute truth. I'm like, my God, the next year there's a glaring, simple fact that I'm so embarrassed that I didn't know. And then the next year, and the next year, and the next year. What God has to do to give me enlightenment? Why am I making him work so hard? So how to do that and his plan? It's inconceivable, because it's inconceivable the subtleties of our misconception. So it's an and great philosophers want to know the plan of the Lord. He has a general plan to purify us, but exactly how he's going to do it, who can get what we need? What we need. So, well, I'll just finish with this purport. I have a little time for questions. The bewilderment of Maharaj Yudhisthira over his past sinful act, the resulting suffering, is completely negated by the great authority Bhishma, one of the 12 authorized persons. Bhishma wanted to impress upon Maharaj Yudhisthira that since time immemorial, no one, including such demigods as Shiva and Brahma, could ascertain the real plan of the Lord. So what can we understand about it? It is useless also to inquire about it. Even the exhaustive philosophical inquiries of sages cannot ascertain the plan of the Lord. The best policy is to simply abide by the orders of the Lord without argument. The suffering of the Pandavas was never due to their past deeds. The Lord had to execute the plan of establishing the kingdom of virtue, and therefore his own devotees suffered temporarily in order to establish the conquest of virtue. Bhishma Dev was certainly satisfied by seeing the triumph of virtue, and he was glad to see King Yudhisthira on the throne, although he himself fought against him. Even a great fighter like Bhishma could not win the battle of Kurukshetra, because the Lord wanted to show that vice cannot conquer virtue, regardless of who tries to execute it. Bhishma Dev was a great devotee of the Lord, but he chose to fight against the Pandavas by the will of the Lord, because the Lord wanted to show that a fighter like Bhima could not win on the wrong side. So, are there any questions?
Maharaj?
Yes.
I missed one of the 3 points you made in regards to when you're in a difficulty.
Okay, three points.
One of them was responding to the circumstance by appropriate principle of truth, and then the other one following the guidance of those who are elevated and experienced, and there was one other, the first one.
The other one was to see God and worship him.
Oh, the basic. Yeah.
Yeah, in every circumstance, Hare Krishna. Even like Prabhupada, when he was, they asked him during that Indo-Pakistan war, what would you do if the bomb came here?
Right.
Prabhupada said, Hare Krishna. Okay. He would see Krishna. It's seeing God. It's God. It's God. The pain you come from is the Nikshamano. I bow my head again and again and again to the mercy of God. And I'm just saying that, you know, I have my own trials and tribulations. It's nothing of the magnitude that, you know, we read about in the newspapers sometimes, you know? And what to speak of terminal diseases that people get. And, you know, but so, you know, I'm sure it's my test will still to come. But Krishna is at least preparing me. But I just want to be able to see God. I think that will have to do with our dependence and our experience of his reciprocation in our lives.
Yeah. And one other question. In a particular situation that I'm in at the moment,
yes.
I'm wondering if sometimes in regards to a difficult relationship, if sometimes silence, not responding at all, is an option, or is that
it silence is what?
Like when there's been some words spoken that are let's say unacceptable or something, to just not respond at all, to just drop it.
Yeah. Well, this is a nice example. Like in a particular incident where someone is harsh or something or speaks harshly, what is the appropriate response? Well, you know, and without getting into the details, there may be different appropriate response, but certainly, according to Shastra, one of the responses is silence.
Yeah.
In certain circumstances. The Bible, for example, doesn't it say you turn the other cheek or something?
Right.
So in certain circumstances, definitely one of the another circumstance, something said may be the response. I mean, it depends on the particular circumstance, and that's why it says following principles but having the guidance of the Brahmins and the Vaishnavas, because sometimes the application of the principles are a little subtle.
Yeah.
But certainly, one option is to turn the other cheek.
Yeah.
But in another circumstance, another option may be to speak something. You know, it depends on the circumstance, the relationship, the person, because sometimes we see in codependent relationships, that sometimes you actually speak up as the principal,
Yeah.
And sometimes in other relationships, it's better to be silent or speak. So definitely it's one option. I can't say in a particular circumstance,
right. But
definitely, yes.
Yeah. And one more quick question. In the beginning, you mentioned about without poetry and drama, one can't properly describe the rasa. So where is that in Antilila?
That's in Antilila 1. A little bit towards the end, Ramananda Roy begins to describe it, and he actually says that.
Thank you.
It's not possible. Maybe Lord Chaitanya himself says that. He says, without poetry and drama, you can't explain these subjects.
Okay, thank
because
you very
they
much.
They have to be recreated. In other words, you can't analyze them in an analytical way. It's limited.
Yeah.
You have to communicate the experience. And that's what drama is supposed to do. It's supposed to transfer a particular emotion or experience.
Right. Pierce the heart.
Yeah.
Thank you,
okay.
Maharaj. Thank you.
Thank you. Very nice. Any other questions?
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Please accept my
business. Hare Bhav. What's this?
This is Parameshwar.
Parameshwar, okay.
You can hear me?
I hear you.
Oh, okay. I want to ask, what is the difference between having a high tolerance level and God giving you only what you can bear.
What is the difference between a high tolerance level
and God?
A high tolerance level and?
And God giving you only what you can bear.
And God giving you only what you can bear.
Yeah.
Well, I'm trying
God
to...
God not giving you more than you can bear. Maybe that's better.
I'm not giving you more than you can bear.
Yeah.
God not giving you more than you can bear. Well, again, his plan is inconceivable. Whatever he's giving you is what you need to experience, even if it's more than you can bear. But from our side, you know, obviously that one of the appropriate responses to difficulty is to bear it and to tolerate it. And to tolerate it in the sense of not becoming despondent. You know, it's not becoming hopeless. Because no matter how difficult it is, the faithful person understands there's some good from it, actually, because it's God. And you may not be able to understand it, and that's what enables you to bear it. What people can't bear and experience is when it becomes hopeless.
Mm.
But what he's saying here, Bhishma Dev, it never becomes hopeless, because there's always some fruit of realization that one can extract. So that's really what enables one to tolerate that confidence and faith that it's God. And the example I gave, my you know, what could be worse, my talking about my uncle, you know, how difficult is that? The ship that sunk and you're going to die. You're going to be dying if the ship was in Greenland. It's going to be plunged into these ice-cold waters that people got. How more worse than that be? But you see that men of deep faith, they just have experience from their life. It's a realization. They live lives depending on God, and they've always experienced God in their lives, and there's no reason to think that he won't be there then. So, you know, it's not, you know, we die. Can we tolerate that? You know, and everybody's going to die. But what we see is that it's a difference when you die and you think it's the end of your existence, and when you die and you think it's a change of body. It's a big difference. So it enables one It's the depression, it's the mental thing that's the torture, not the physical thing. It's the mental thing that's the torture, that now my existence is finished. What can be worse than that? The annihilation of existence. But for devotee, that never happens.
Okay. So it's a matter of really being patient and really trusting.
It's a matter of what?
Being patient, and that the Lord is, and trusting the Lord, that he is doing the best thing for you, no matter what.
It's just a matter of being patient, but that patience comes from experience. And the experience...
With what?
From experience.
Oh.
The patience comes from the application of the will of God and the will of Guru in one's life, and the experience of the fruit of doing so, the fruit of realization, the fruit of realization that one said. So when one lives,
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Because you said that that at the end of tolerance there is that fruit, right?
There is a fruit. The fruit is the fruit of realization. The fruit that God is there. Yes. God is there for one who is dependent on him. and one experiences that. But I'm just saying, when you have gone through those, when my friend said that to me, there's a fruit. If you tolerate, he was saying that with realization because he experienced that in his life. So he was communicating that to me. Now, because I had faith in him, I also he gave me faith. Mm-hmm. And I experienced the same thing. And then when you live your life like that, under the guidance of spiritually minded person to a more advanced, and you experience life in that way, then what happens is that you develop a faith. You develop a confidence in God and in God's presence in your life.
Well, I think that
right now.
Go ahead.
Yeah.
Well, I think the challenge is to be tolerant with love instead of anger, because it can turn into anger, and that's only because of one's own dissatisfaction.
It's a challenge.
Yeah.
It's a challenge. It's definitely a challenge. Not to become frustrated, etc.
Yeah.
It's definitely a challenge. Life is tough. That's just a fact.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a challenge to keep faith in those circumstances. I'm not denying it.
Mm-hmm.
Somehow or other, everybody who's on this Sangha believes in God. Now, to what extent we believe in God may vary, but my God, I'm saying this. It's just like Hari Kirtan when he was here. I'm giving my class in the evening at 4 o'clock every day, and there's such a wonderful group of people that are here. I mean, real relishing. And there's one lady from Sarada Gabriel, I can't pronounce it. How do you pronounce that, Mila? Sorry, Sarajevo. Sarajevo in Serbia or something. This lady, she was 39, she was coming to the temple, right? And then the war broke out, and everyone fled. And then she was just coming to the temple, so the GBC or the guru said, you be in charge. So she was in charge of the temple during the war. She was on a list to be assassinated. She was arrested by the secret police. You know what I'm saying? And actually, somehow, Shiny Tai was here. She said, I recognize you, even with his beard. It's Shiny Tai after the war ended. He went over there with Gunagrai Maj, and that's when that Kirtan body got attacked. And he even said, to see the devastation that people face. So Hari Kirtan was saying, I'm 50 years old. I just missed the Vietnam War. I never got in any other war, and he's looking at her and saying, and I think I have a problem.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes in America, we really haven't really faced problems like people have faced in other parts of the world sometimes,
Right.
To this lady, what she's gone through. And then her only relation was her father. And her father disappeared for 5 years. She didn't know if he was dead or alive. I remember when I was in Lower Manhattan when the World Trade Center, was attacked. And I remember that so many devotees were freaking out because they'd never been through a calamity where there was a total shift in your environment. And for people, it was like, my God, America, we're under attack. It could happen here. And people freaking out. I remember how many people were just freaking out and getting letters and phone calls. And of course, after 2 weeks, everybody just settled in again to the same illusion.
Yeah.
So I'm just, thinking, now I'm feeling, oh, strong, I'm here in Vrindavan. Let's see if the tragedy comes. I keep my smile, my optimism, my faith. Or if I say, why is God doing this to me? Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Any other questions?
Thank you, Maharaj.
Thank you, Parmeshwar.
Maharaj?
Yes.
Maharaj, it's Mahamuni. Thanks for another great class. Appreciate it.
Okay, Mahamuni. Okay.
In response to what Rasa was asking about, something came to my mind, and I wanted to ask you if it was a legitimate like application. So there's that verse in the, I think there's a verse in the 11th canto that says, you reciprocate with different people in certain ways. And it's the characteristic of the Madhyam Bhakta to reciprocate with the envious by neglect. And usually I think we interpret that verse in terms of envy of Krishna, but I remembered that when I was reading Advaita's commentary on the Yoga Sutra. They use the same principle, but they just seem to talk about envy of people towards you. And you should just neglect them. So I didn't know if that would be something that could apply to this question. Do you think that's a reasonable application?
It's like a reverberation, so when it's so subtle, I can't hear so well. So.
You want me to repeat it? You want me to like summarize it?
Yeah, summarize it again.
Okay, so so by the way, is it better now? I was in a small room. I was hiding from my daughter, so you could hear.
It's better.
It's better? Okay, so what Ross's question was about how to relate to people who you're having, there's some hostility there. And it came to my mind that we often hear that the Madhyama Bhakta relates with different people in different ways, and the way they relate to envious is by neglect. And I know that usually we interpret that the person who's envious is envious of God, and that's who they neglect.
Yeah.
But in Advaita's Yoga Sutra commentary, they use the same thing, like the four types of people, but they talk about how those people relate to you. So, you know, if someone's envious towards you, you can neglect them because engaging in a relationship could just make it worse. And I didn't know if you thought that was a reasonable way to apply this.
I think that sounds very reasonable, and this is what Shastra means. It gives the application of different principles to particular circumstances. Yeah. Right. If someone acts towards envy to you, an appropriate response is to ignore, because engaging in the relationship will only make it worse. You know? And then it comes to the point, if it's an envious person or it's just an antagonistic moment, you know, then it becomes more complicated. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It may not just be black and white.